to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge next generation commerce. I'm Brian.
And I'm Philip.
Today, we have the ever active Jason L. Baptiste. Say hi.
Hey, how are you guys?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. And as always, listeners, we'd love to have feedback from you about today's show. So please leave us feedback in the discuss comment box on our site. You can always subscribe to listen to Future Commerce on iTunes and Google Play, or listen right from your Amazon Echo and TuneIn Radio with the phrase "Alexa, play Future Commerce podcast." That said, Jason, tell us a little about yourself. Give us your history. Who are you?
I'll give you the quick background and, you know, kind of get through me quick, and we can get to the topics. So, kind of, I started as an entrepreneur as a young age. I grew up outside of New York City in New Jersey. Had a bit of an entrepreneurial family. Started my first kind of, you could call it, consulting company. It really wasn't a venture backable startup when I was, you know, young in school in Miami at 19. Also built a couple of products. Once again, those are kind of side projects, but they definitely gained some traction. That's a whole story to themselves. So kind of did that for a bit, moved out to Silicon Valley, dropped out, promised myself, hey, in a year or two, I'd go back and finish school no matter what. Kept to that promise. Went back and finished. As I was finishing, I said, hey, I, you know, want to create another company and, you know, go and do something venture-backed and, you know, potentially very massive. So teamed up with a guy I had met, you know, a few years earlier, Andres Barreto, who was the co-founder of a music sharing site called Grooveshark, which was based in Gainesville, Florida.
Yeah.
You know, I think, Philip, you're a Florida guy, right? Yep, so, you know, we had started down there, didn't stick in Florida for too long. Really, the aim was, we were doing a lot of writing. I just wanted to make our content look better on mobile. The iPad had come out, and thought it was a chance to reimagine the way content looked. So, you know, we started that and said, well, let's move to the East Coast, the West Coast, well, Northeast Coast and West Coast, and just, you know, kind of, that's where you got to go if you want to raise money and build out a team. So we did that, and ultimately, in a course of like 2-3 months after launching the product, it was bootstrapped. We had, you know, no personal cash at the time. You know, raised our first $1 million, got into the TechStars program in New York. You know, we're off to the races. So I ran that for a little over 4 years. Company called OnSwipe. Mm-hmm. We grew that, you know, pretty substantially. Raised about $17 million. In terms of scale, by the time we were acquired in 2014, we were number 3 on ComScore as opposed to like online platforms. So it was, I think, Facebook, Google, and us one of the months. And then, you know, in terms of publishing platforms, we were the largest on iOS mobile web, twice the size of Tumblr. You know, really simply what we did was we made the content look great, magazine like beautiful on mobile devices. You know, gave that software away for free to a publisher of any size. In return, they let us put, you know, beautiful advertising ads that don't suck. And that was often, you know, a very interesting challenge. I could do a whole podcast on that world. But, you know, we were acquired in 2014 by a larger ad tech company called Beanstalk Media. I stuck around for a little over 6 months, kind of running product and new strategy, kind of combining the two. So they were a non-venture backed, very profitable, kind of 9-figure run rate company, and we were venture backed, you know, heavily engineering focused. So putting those two organizations together was an interesting thing. I'll leave it at that. Stuck around for 6 months until I said, well, I'm, you know, ready to go do something new, and kind of that new be starting something new, joining something, or taking time. And like all entrepreneurs, and I'm crazy enough to go out and do it again. And, you know, spent a few months. I teamed up with a very good friend of mine, an entrepreneur, Nathaniel McNamara. He used to be a VC and, you know, started a couple of companies that were acquired. So we ultimately decided upon a company called Morsel, and, you know, went through the most recent TechStars class. Morsel makes it incredibly easy for companies to feed their employees a healthy and delicious lunch. So thinking of it less as a food company and more as a healthcare company, but, you know, in many ways a commerce company. We're kind of keeping it on the radar. I haven't talked about it too much, kind of just trying to get work done with it. But, you know, kind of as a segue, you know, how does it play into commerce? I think there is, you know, something very interesting happening with food right now. Less less on a side that affects us because we go direct to companies, but more on the consumer side.
Finally, would agree.
You know, and that the way what's very specifically interesting and kind of thinking about commerce is there's always opportunities, and I think both media and commerce, but in this case, commerce, when new distribution platforms come about, and you've seen in the past 18 months, all these distribution digital distribution platforms, equivalent of e-commerce for food. So you've got Uber Eats, Amazon, Seamless, Postmates, DoorDash, you know, and a few others, and then over in London, the UK. So you'll walk into most restaurants. I'm based in New York City, and you know, those places have like five or six tablet ordering platforms, is pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, so you basically have this big distribution channel, and I think, you know, something interesting we did was we analyzed on Seamless, you know, what are people eating and ordering, and it turns out, you know, there's the equivalent of like SEO on Seamless, which is figuring out how do you create these ghost restaurants that essentially rank really high for things like vegan is popular, sushi is popular, you know, and there's a company taking advantage of this called Green Summit, where they're a restaurant that is delivery only, and they only live on platforms like Seamless and probably eventually Uber Eats.
Wow, that's really interesting.
You know, so and it's just like they can spin up a restaurant, shut it down, and you know, we did this study first because we were just curious and what would people like to eat and how can you make that healthy? And then once we did this, we noticed all the popular, like the ones that still, basically you could see pizza was saturated, but vegan was not saturated. That's kind of the algorithm we had created. And these folks were ranking for probably the top five or six ones. So I think, you know, what's really interesting about commerce is when you have new platforms come around, you know, what does that enable? You know, and kind of seeing this on the food side, that's one. And you know, I know you guys do some stuff with Magento, obviously, that enabled a bunch of folks and Shopify and all those guys. But this is a very interesting niche one that, you know, even though it's niche, it's such a large market.
Right.
It's amazing how fractured, like, the point of sale market really is. And I think it sort of speaks to, you know, we tend to get a little myopic in our view in the digital commerce realms, like in our little bubble over here. We really think about, you know, unifying a bunch of different platforms and they're all the same players, but it kind of just reminds me that retail is so pervasive and, you know, three out of every four people in planet Earth are employed by someone that's, you know, retail centric in some way that's, you know, not necessarily digital commerce based. So point of sale is everywhere and there's so many different platforms. And now you've listed all of these, you know, all of these really just sort of app based point of sale platforms that are specific to, you know, just particular vendors. I'm curious, are there any challenges, like regulatory challenges in your business to or did you come across any that would prevent you from running a food delivery service without a front of house or without having seating? Is there any sort of, because that seems like it might be an interesting sort of unicorn in the business.
Yeah, you know, we don't experience it that much because, you know, we have a kitchen and that stays up to the health regulation codes and, you know, tens of thousands of folks have figured that out. So you just follow that and you're fine. But there's popping up in kind of a company that went through Techstars with us and there's about, you know, two or three other competitors. What they do is they enable people who cook at home to sell their food. So it's, hey, if you've got a great recipe for a hamburger or a dessert, you know, these folks are able to sell that, and that's illegal in most, if not all, states. So Homemade's the one that, you know, I know very well, and there's Josephine as well. That's where regulation's really starting to come in.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. You know, so essentially people are selling food out of their homes. I've heard about a lot of pop-up restaurants sort of happening in people's houses recently, and I feel like being able to sort of create a platform that, you know, allows for discovery That would be very interesting.
The thing that I think has really kind of challenged me in trying these food services or food, it's they've really nailed discovery, right? They tend to send me things that I wouldn't necessarily cook. And I can sort of set some preferences, but I seem like...
Oh, the Blue Aprons.
Right, right. Those kind of things. But Blue Apron in particular, I must have gotten like 4 boxes with artichokes in a row before I just said, I'm done. Like, I'm so done. I'm done with this whole idea. It's just not a... Anyway, that might just be my own personal tastes, but I...
Could be. Could be. Actually, I was thinking about this today earlier after I kind of checked out Morse a little bit more over the past couple of days. I was like thinking back to something that you said, Philip, on one of our previous episodes on how, like, honestly, you're kind of tired of making choices and you're ready for people to make choices for you.
Absolutely.
Sort of give you options within the context of a specific, within the context of a specific goal or something to that effect. So I loved the concept of Morsel, which is basically giving people healthy options and allowing companies to, sort of make the decision for their employees that they will eat healthy. and then allowing employees to make decisions from there. I started running through like all different types of analogies here, but the best one I came up with is you're playing sort of food God, and you've made you've created an ethical line, and we can make decisions within that ethical code, if you will. It's nice because you've created a system and a lifestyle for those employees that they can live in and be happy and be healthy.
The food choice.
Yeah.
Sorry, I go ahead.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as much as food God, but it kind of, we kind of made it simple. I'm a big believer in most things in this world are difficult, and you can really create a lot of value if you just make it simple.
Right.
I mean, once again, going back to commerce, I mean, wire cutter is probably one of my favorite things happening in commerce because it's, I'd say wire cutter and then also ratings, RTINGS, the TV site, because they just make things really, really simple and easy to understand.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Those are two sites I'm not familiar with. Could you kind of, for the uninitiated among us, can you fill me in a little bit?
Yeah, so Wirecutter was started by one of the founding editor of Gizmodo, and they're basically like, okay, somebody wants a TV, somebody wants a fridge. There's so many different choices. Like, holy shit, like, it'll take you forever. So they really simplify the process on things, and, they just make money as an Amazon affiliate.
That's what they do.
They're doing incredibly well.
Nice.
RTINGS is just a uniform way to rate all the TVs that come out where, and this is kind of something I talked about with passive commerce, like TV and electronics fall into that. It's a big purchase and you're kind of like, unless the TV breaks, it's not pressing. So you're going to want to do a lot of research over time. It's kind of what I use to be like, all right, this is the TV I'm going to get. And it just makes it all really, really simple to understand.
Nice. Cool. Well, I'm going to change directions for a minute here because I think there's something, it's a little secret, honestly, that I think all of our listeners should know and that you should really know, Jason, is that, Philip's been a pretty big fan of yours for a long time. I might even put him in the fanboy category. He introduced me to your article on passive commerce, and we spent literally a whole episode on our show talking about an article on passive commerce. So, given this context, I was wondering if you could give us an update on your view of passive commerce, where you think it's headed, maybe some examples of business doing it well, and just maybe a quick update since your last article on it.
Yeah, and I wrote that almost 2 years ago, and I still think it holds true, which is, you've got different types of commerce, right? Which is, I know what I want, I'm just going to go buy it, and Amazon takes care of that, Pinterest does, but, there are certain things, like I just mentioned the TV situation, it was exactly, so it's funny, I haven't read the article in a bit, and it's like, what I described with TV and electronics is exactly what I went through, which is, all right, I knew I wanted a new TV, kind of, you know, it was time, what I had was old, and, you know, wanted something 4K and HDR, and, you know, I did a lot of the reviews in this, but I really was waiting for the right price and the right thing, and then eventually, you know, that came about, and I pulled the trigger, and I still think it exists, and I don't know how many places are taking, you know, advantage of it. A company that, you know, maybe is. So I think, you know, you've always got supply and demand. So mm-hmm. folks supplying and folks demanding product buying. I think on the supply side, you've got a new, you know, company called FlipLease. They also went through Techstars where it's basically, okay, you've got a lease, you want to get out. You know, it may be pressing, so that would take it out of passive commerce. But a lot of the time it's, hey, I'm going to put my lease up there and see what the hell happens so I can move somewhere else. It's kind of, you know, it's a passive way that if an offer comes around, you can get it. So I think that's an interesting one. You know, I haven't seen too many other things come out that really take advantage of it. And it's not, you know, it's a very important category, but I don't think it's something where it just applies to everything. There's certainly some things where it's, I want it, I need it, I'm going to get it now. And there are things kind of, you know, the three that I described was kind of housing, electronics, and cars.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. One of the things we talked about was Tesla selling cars through Nordstrom. I guess that's kind of a cross sell, but it's sort of like opportunity to purchase, you know, when someone maybe has already thought about that decision for a long time. It's not an impulse buy, but, you know, it was an interesting idea.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you're waiting for the right thing to come about. You know, disposable income is part of it, but it's, you know, basically I know I want it, okay, but I don't need it today, so I'm going to wait for it. You could say a deal, that's part of it, but you know, you're going to wait for the right opportunity, a mix of product and price.
Right.
I think, you know, if you go on the price vector a lot, you know, you've got, there's a site called slickdeals.net, which is actually pretty interesting where,
oh yeah,
you know, I put in a search term for a certain type of TV, like OLED TV, and they, you know, they would ping me whenever there was a good deal. And I thought that was pretty interesting. So I think you've got, you know, things that enable passive commerce as well. Yeah.
I use Deal News, which is very similar. I think there's a lot of that going on right now where people are sort of kind of subscribing to different pricing tools and waiting for something to go down in price before they actually make the purchase out. Just the right opportunity presents itself. So yeah, that was definitely love that article and good to hear, you know, an update. I love the flip.lease. That's pretty awesome. Appreciate your insight.
Yeah, you know, and if you guys come across any other stuff, please send it my way. You know, it's interesting. I'm doing this interview. I'm thinking about it a little bit more.
Yeah, nice. I think what's really interesting is that it doesn't necessarily have to take, you know, all these different ways of engaging with like you said, suppliers and consumers they don't take just one shape and form anymore, right? Like if only it were that simple. And so I think you know, we sort of hit the nail on the head there, which is you know, sometimes you hit on a product or a certain vertical in this space and it has incredible consumer demand, and you've stoked consumer demand that maybe they didn't even know that they wanted. The iPhone is a great example, is transformative there, but and probably like a little played out of an example. But I think the exact opposite, the antithesis of that might be the new iPhone with the AirPods. And I kind of thought this is interesting. I thought I'd kind of ping you on this because I really like how you tend to approach these types of topics. But I do see the value, and maybe I wonder if you even see the value of having something like a digital assistant like Siri everywhere without, you know, necessarily having to have hands-on operation. Is that something what do you think Apple's really trying to do here?
You know, I think it's not just Apple, it's a lot of folks, and frankly, like, I don't use Siri that much. I don't own an Amazon Alexa, because frankly, I don't see the need for it. You know, I like some of the voice stuff, but it feels like a nice to have, not a need to have at this point. But obviously, it's selling very well, and hey, it just might not be for me, and I may be wrong on it. You know, I think a lot of it is kind of its new ways of search and discovery. It's kind of saying, it's the new interface in, you know, you've got text and you've got voice. You know, Apple could easily do, I mean, they even do with the new Photos app in iOS 10. You could do a search box and get the same things you get with Siri, or asking it questions and getting a response. So I think it's them saying, hey, let's get good at search, something that's important to Google, but more important to Apple, it helps them create a better OS user experience, you know, and they're saying, let's try it by voice. And I think a lot of other folks are doing that. You know, you've got a little bit of social awkwardness with it, because it's like the new Mac OS has Siri on it, but it's like, I'm sitting in front of an office full of people. I'm not going to say, hey, show me, you know, files for employees with poor performance, right? Like, it just comes off weird.
that's incredibly tweetable. Yeah, so
I feel like it was a little bit of a Me Too play in many ways, honestly. Because, like, for instance, I think Mary Meeker's report, or I don't remember where I saw this, but it was like 25% of searches in the Windows search bar, their desktop search bar, were actually voice searches. And so I think Apple saw, wait, hold on, there might be a bit of a trend here. But the question is, were those on mobile or desktop? I'm not quite sure.
Well, for Microsoft, probably desktop is there. Non-existent in mobile.
That's a very good point.
Well, you're talking to Brian.
Yeah. When Brian's, I said mobile, like, I meant more like tablets, but yes.
Brian was one of like seven people that had that had a Windows phone at one point.
Did have a Windows phone.
So he has a different.
They were actually, I love the design of it. Like, not so much like the industrial design, the software design. Like, I'm a big fan of kind of their Metro design language. I played around with one a bit, just kind of a dev unit to mess around with. So, you know, I just think it was too late at that point for it, but like, it's a good device. Good device and good software.
I thought of this, and I know I put it in our sort of pre-prep, but I feel like I just have to say it out loud because it's just such a great thing that I thought of. But I feel like there is a sort of an aversion to this new wave of technology, particularly the voice of activated stuff. And while we may be really excited about it here on the show, we've covered in depth, you know, the implications of privacy and child Online Protection Act implication, all these things that are really difficult to navigate. And I know it's kind of cringy for some people. And so when I see people like Chris Messina, who I really respect, sort of say something to the effect of, you know, having Siri on these AirPods is like having sex in your ear all the time, it's incredibly cringy, and it like makes me wish that had never been said, because
it's weird.
It kind of detracts, right? Like, it takes away from it.
I think, you know, we kind of, beforehand the show, we were talking about, we want to discuss both the AirPods and the spectacles.
Yeah.
And I think they're actually the same topic in one, which is kind of wearables and, you know, what is, you can say cool, but like, what does the normal average everyday person, especially a teen, want? I think teens and kind of early 20-year-olds are the tastemakers of consumer technology. Like, you know, people, that's why Google Glass didn't work, all right? I think it's why the Apple Watch is not going to continue working, because frankly, you know, people would rather have it as a fitness band than replacing their watch. You know, and the same thing, what I think is neat about AirPods, just wireless headphones, so that's what I'm wearing right now. I've had them for 2 years. Everybody's complaining about the headphone jack being gone, and it's just like, come on, shut up. Or it's like, number one, they give you an adapter, and number two, it's such a better experience with wireless headphones. Like, it changed. I still, to this, you know, they say in the past 2 years, probably one of the best purchases I have made is switching to wireless headphones. So I haven't needed a headphone jack in 2 years, so I think it's one of those things that's like stylish and neat, but the issue of, you know, oh, are we going to have this, you know, her the movie like scenario where people are talking to the thing in their ear, I think it still comes back to people are weird talking into nothing while roaming around in public.
Right.
Yeah, I think the question is that going to change? I think, you know, I think, like you mentioned, we've got a new generation of people coming up who are living in a different set of tech. I think there was a whole set of, you know, of people out there who said that smartphones, like who's going to use a smartphone, right? But this is an entirely new way of interfacing with technology that I think is unnatural from like sort of a people looking at you standpoint and sort of a social etiquette standpoint, but from an actual user interaction perspective, we talk all day long. So I can't help but feel and I would argue that that actually voice interfaces are going to be a large part of how we interact with technology in the future. It's just we're in an awkward phase right now because we're not used to it. It's not something we see every day. It's not, and we don't feel it around us. Take another generation of users before that gets normal.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, so it's my wife's little brother. He is 10, 11 years old. He uses Siri all the time. Like, he has a little iPhone, and all he does is use Siri. And I think his response is, like, it's fun. So I may be off on this, or I'm not get it, but that could be where the world is going, and I think fun is a key thing. Like, the reason Snapchat is so successful is they're just fun. Like, a big problem that I have with Silicon Valley is, like, a lot of it's just dry and not fun, and I think Snapchat was smart to go in LA, and they do stuff that's fun. And that's been missing from products for a bit.
I totally agree. And I think, actually, fun can drive a lot of innovation and a lot of new behaviors. Tons. And, yeah. Yep. And will we get into a situation where it is kind of a her type thing? I think question is, when are we going to start having, you know, if you will, push notifications in our ears? Because I think that might drive more voice interaction as well. Because if you have someone talking at you, you're going to want to respond. So I think that could also really drive that technology forward. So we get to that point.
If I may, I'm a little bit bullish on Snapchat's glasses in that with the Me hope too. That it gets people's faces out of their phones and living in real life. If that would like, I'm a musician, okay, and or a failed one anyway. And I'm a musician who I played before the era of the glowing phone screen and the selfie and. You know, it was an immersive experience and people lived in that moment. And I appreciate that people live in those moments differently now. And it's totally okay by me. I make the choice that I'd like to be in that moment and remember it the way I remember it instead of taking a picture that I'll never look at again. it's totally okay. Like there's no judgment on my part, but I do feel like it is a better experience if you're not worrying about, you know, sharing that experience with everyone that's not there. And it's sort of Snapchat has already hit on that because for the most part, the communication that they center their technology around was supposed to be ephemeral and things that are fleeting and momentary and they go away. Maybe if we can get bring that snap, into the glasses and people putting their phones, in their pocket, maybe that's a thing that can happen that can.
We actually just talked about this last episode with Healy Cipher. Like, get your heads up.
Yep.
Right.
Experience the world around you. And technology like this is going to make it so that we can still, you know, have all of this amazing tech, but still be able to experience life.
Right. And these are sunglasses from the mock-ups I've seen. I mean, I've not used a pair. I'm sure that we'll see people walking around with them very soon, but I, you know, it's, They all seemed to be sunglasses, and which sort of evokes the outdoor doing things. You know, I don't know that you're looking on your phone at or looking at your phone with sunglasses on anyway.
And I think wearables do some of the same thing, which is if you get a notification, you can kind of look at your wrist as opposed to back down at your phone.
Yeah, but I think that I think all technology can be used, you know, to help us distract ourselves. So I think it really depends on the person using it. And I don't want to harp on that too long, but I do think I am bullish on it because I think it might be, it might drive more social or real, you know, IRL engagement, if you will, and get us kind of back in that headspace.
And I can't wait till they just add an earpiece to that as well.
And AR, and then we're catching Pokemon and yelling at them and, you know, all kinds of cool things.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty wild what's going on.
Sorry, what did you say there, Jason?
No, it's pretty wild to just see what's going on.
It is. In the world. What a time to be alive. So you wrote a little while back on some problems with local discovery. And I think I can't think of anything more local than food. You know, food is intensely local. And so, you know, there's all kinds of advancements in mobile technology to help you, you know, engage in local discovery. What are your thoughts there on how are you solving that at Morsel? And are you seeing more places than ever to help you drive your engagement to your local customers? Or is it still sort of the same, you know, sort of spray and pray advertising strategies that, you know, have really kind of failed local?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it doesn't really apply to us because we're more B2B as opposed to the individual consumer. I think, you know, but obviously spend a lot of time thinking about the consumer itself. And what we talked about earlier in the show with how people are optimizing almost for kind of seamless search optimization, that's one. You know, there's a delivery-only restaurant called Savory, which they would put, their name was like exclamation Savory, so they would show up first everywhere in directories.
Like the phone book of the 21st century. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, I think credit card data is actually the most accurate possible data you can have. Foursquare is great, but they don't get a whole picture of what you're doing. You know, it's only part of it. I think credit card data is a very interesting way to do local discovery. Local search is still huge. Social media is great for retention, but, you know, nobody's going on Facebook or Twitter and finding a pizza place. You know, they may subscribe to you and then come back after, but, you know, it's kind of, I see all these places with, like, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. It's like, I don't know, it's like, I just don't really care to do that for even my most favorite of restaurants. You know, I think what chatbots are doing are interesting for kind of local customer service, but once again, that's down the funnel. I think discovery is a lot of search. I think TripAdvisor is a fascinating company, even though it's like, what, 15 years old. It's especially for traveling when you go to foreign places. They've really just done such a good job there. What I'm really weary of with discovery, companies like Groupon, because for merchants, it's just the retention on it's so bad. I have a fear ClassPass could be the same thing for fitness studios, but we'll see. But I really like the business model and the team and all that. It's, you know, my biggest worry is when you do these discounts, is there a way that you can get people coming back at a price that makes sense? Otherwise, you're just literally losing $20 and never getting any, you know, long-term customers.
Yeah. Have you tried Allo yet? The new Google chat?
No, it's just one of those things. Like, it doesn't, I don't really see what it's going to add to my life.
One thing that I did like about it, I think that kind of plays into discovery a little bit, is the Google Assist is very easy to access via that chat and while you're chatting with your friends. And so, felt like when I, you know, said, I'm talking to someone and I want to go get happy hour with them. I just chatted at Google and felt like it brought back some pretty decent search results like nearby. And I think you can do that with a lot of different things. I felt like that was actually pretty helpful.
Yeah, their keyboard company is like Slash and Gboard doing that as well.
Oh. Yeah, cool stuff.
And context is important, right? I think the context of that conversation happens to be centered around, you know, a text interface and SMS or texting sort of an experience. And we see this in iMessage. iMessage has similar capabilities now in iOS 10. So, you know, I think it's becoming, it's interesting. But, you know, I find it interesting that, you know, someone like Jason just doesn't see the value yet. So my question to you, Jason, would be,
I could be wrong.
No, yeah. And that's totally okay. You know, everybody has their own taste, but, could you fathom, what would need to happen in that space for you to be, for you to reconsider? Would it have to be, you know, market adoption and, you know, your social network pulling you into it? Or is there some killer app or feature that you could, you know, dream up that would have to happen to pull you into more of those types of engagements?
There's really like two lenses you can think through. One is kind of single player utility. Mm-hmm. You know, and right now, frankly, Foursquare and Google Search do such a great job that I don't need Allo, right? Then it's like, well, if I don't need that from Allo, what's the second lens in that social? And it's like, nobody's on that. I'm not going to be messaging folks with that.
It's true.
You know, it's like I use Slack for work, a little bit of Facebook Messenger here and there. You know, but it's primarily SMS.
Right. Sense. Well, yeah, actually, that leads us into another question I have. You know, a few weeks ago, we actually interviewed Scott Emmons, who's the head of the Innovation Lab at Neiman Marcus. And talking about SMS, you know, he called, and not just SMS, but obviously chat in general, he called conversational commerce and bots sort of the beacons of 2016, which I found pretty interesting because beacons, I feel like beacons have garnered a lot of attention over the past couple of years, but adoption still feels pretty limited. So,
pretty low.
Yeah. So I guess maybe I've got two questions now. what do you think about beacons? You know, do you think they're sort of a stepping stone type technology, or do they have a long-term future? And then, what do you think about conversational commerce? Do you have, some insights and you see how the U.S. reacting and, what adoption will look like here?
Yeah, so you know, talking about beacons, I wrote an article about, you know, 2 years ago as well on beacons. I really like, I see the promise of them. I see that there is a purpose and a need. What Estimode is doing is really neat, kind of as a beacon platform. Yeah. But the biggest issue is you've got to have the app downloaded of, let's say, the merchant that you're going to, and frankly, most people don't have that. So you've just got this big. That's one step. You know, so I think it's possible. I think kind of beacons in the enterprise, so kind of, you know, I'll give you one example of a company somebody could create, which is give everybody, you know, put beacons on each manufacturing station. All right, you've got a phone on you which has a beacon, and as you move about, you can start to measure how long each person is at, you know, a factory station. You can start to actually optimize the factory process by knowing where presence is and how long people are spending. That wasn't possible before. So I think that's neat. Nobody's doing that. That could be a potentially big company. You know, so I think that's, beacons could have promise. It's just, they've got so much inherent friction that they may never realize it. By conversational commerce, you mean bots, chat bots, right?
Yeah.
Bots, but also with maybe combined with human interaction as well.
Yeah, so let's take the part that I like, which is human interaction, right? So there is a lot of different types of commercial interactions, whether it's, you know, products that just require conversation, like buying a house, buying a car. You know, that's never going to be one click for the majority of folks. It's going to require conversation. Like, also, we should be using messaging. So that's really just, hey, how do businesses get on Facebook Messenger, you know, and have customer support go from the phone to there? I don't want to call businesses at all. What I just don't see any future in, and once again, I could be wrong, is chatbots. I don't know anybody who wants a chatbot, and I don't know what a chatbot does better than the web or something else. Even if you got all the NLP right, So, you know, there was one shopping site that I went to. They launched early on the Facebook platform. And legitimately, it took me a minute to go through the chatbot to do what I would do with just a drop down in 2 seconds. So it's kind of technology for technology's sake. You know, I don't see why brands would want chatbots. Like, it's just, it's not, I know people are in their messengers all day long, but that's not necessarily what they want. I think, kind of, in some ways, messengers are the new web browsers. So, can you put interactive web pages there? And Kik has talked about that a bit. So, it's not really chatbots. It's what's happening in China is like, you're getting kicked out to like full-fledged web web interfaces. So I think that is interesting. And media, so, you know, spent a lot of time in media. I've got a couple of media chatbots, and frankly, like, they're neat, but it's just not, it doesn't appeal to me. So, you know, I'm think pretty that, like, bearish on
chatbots could become sort of the, you know, the thing that everyone hates about calling any company for customer service right now, where they literally have to go through a set of menu options via voice or touch tone. Could chatbots be sort of the new version of that?
Yeah, so here's what I'm completely bullish on and I believe is an inevitability is, we will not be calling companies on the phone to interact with them. We will be talking with them through chat, which could also have a voice button one day, where kind of the AI comes in as maybe in the queuing system and kind of helping the operator respond, and then kind of replacing like the phone tree with like a chatbot tree. But like, I don't see this like, oh, every brand's going to have a chatbot and people are going to want to like interact with it. It's just like, I don't see it. I don't see the benefit for the user. Right. What I always care about in a product is like, is this really something people want or need? And, or is it just something that's cool for cool's sake?
Brian, what was I forget the quote, but, somebody reviewed a fashion bot, from some brand and I can't remember who it is, but they reviewed it. And at like the summary of the article was, this is literally the worst way to shop for anything ever. Like, this is,
yeah,
it's like, yeah, it's the worst way you could possibly ever buy something online. but I
don't have that quote in front of me, but yeah, that was the gist of it. It was, I think we were actually talking about, Panda or, weather app. And, yeah, that was their quote. It was the worst possible way to browse the internet.
We had a, I was thinking about this recently because my company bought, you know, company T-shirts, as you know, companies are wont to do, and we had Custom Ink. When you buy T-shirts on Custom Ink, they have this thing that they send around to everybody to fill out a form of what size you are, right, and what style of shirt you want. And it was such a nightmare getting everyone to fill that form out. And I was thinking there are group decisions that happen that engage in commerce that chatbots, and if that had been in our Slack channel, that thing would have been filled out in 3.5 seconds, right? If I could just click it in Slack, done. And so there are commerce and maybe even like group purchase decisions or group sort of democratization of your lunch choices or something to that effect. But I see the need. But we sort of need a, like, it's such a thin need right now. We kind of need the Pokemon Go of that of that to sort of prove the market a little bit, because I see it. We need it, but it doesn't look like, you know,
a long way off.
Yeah, you know, Apple's
feels that way.
Apple seems to be suggesting we'll be buying from Curry Up now with iMessage, and I highly doubt it. It's not going to happen. Anyhow.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see.
See, I think that's a good way to put it.
That's kind of my final comment on the chat box.
Nice. Well, I think, you know, we've kind of hit the end of our time here. So we typically like to end our interviews with having our guests give some near term recommendations for our listeners, and then maybe hit them with a thought for like the next 3 to 5 years, something they should really pay attention to. So what do you have? You got anything really hot you want to say?
Yeah, so actually, I'm going to throw a question to you guys and then give my comments. And I always like to ask this as well, which is, what are kind of like, you know, one or two companies that you both think are under the radar or interesting? You know, so obviously Snapchat isn't under the radar, but what are two companies you don't think get enough attention or pretty interesting?
Oh, that's a great question.
That's a really good question. So this is going to be a little bit more general, but I think there's a lot of very interesting VR startups going on right now that are not getting a lot of attention. I really can't wait to see what Magic Leap does. They still we're still kind of waiting to see with them a little bit, but really interested to see what happens with VR. And with that, and I've mentioned this on several episodes already, I'm very interested to see, and I'll call this company out, what Body Labs is going to do, and other companies like it. But Body Data is something that I'm pretty hot on to see how we end up, you know, utilizing body data in our everyday lives to, you know, whether it be fashion or video games or health or whatever it is, just to see where that heads.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm not as hot on virtual reality as as I know Brian is, because we talk about these things. You know, there's actually I'm really interested in a company that makes Internet of Things devices called Pixel. They sort of grew out of the Raspberry Pi sort of foundation sort of aspect, but they make these incredible. They have a number of devices that are sort of in that, you know, MakerBot sort of space, but I see them transitioning to be able to be used in industry, in industrial applications. Particularly, I have some friends that work for some defense contractors that are seeing some massive uptake in Internet of Things for tracking data of all kinds of things, everything from, you know, like literally vacuum cleaners to the service items that go out and are deployed in the field to service some of their equipment. And so what I think is really interesting is, Internet of Things went backwards, really. They've sort of been toys, and they like tinker toys that people like maybe you and I play with, Jason, but I really feel like IoT technology is really picking up in a big way to be used, you know, maybe not in the merchant direct-to-consumer space, but certainly in industrial applications. So that's something I'm kind of keeping an eye on right now.
One more from me as well. Cool. Blipr. Blipr is an AR company that's building.
Yeah, really cool. Play around with a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, I think we're at this interesting. Kind of my concluding comments is, I think we're at this interesting phase where, you know, I don't know what happens next in consumer, but you basically have all these investors, all these entrepreneurs looking at AR, VR, Bitcoin, you name the trend, because there hasn't been anything in kind of social and mobile for a while. Snapchat's really the last one, and frankly, I think Snapchat is going to be gigantic, kind of Facebook-level gigantic. You know, so the question is, you know, what happens next? It feels like 2016 is almost an intermediary year. As much as there are interesting things happening, nothing has settled, and I think that's going to be something to watch. So kind of the counterintuitive thing is, everybody says don't go start something kind of social and consumer. Maybe go and actually do that.
Like it.
All right.
Good advice.
Thank you to our guest, Jason L. Baptiste, who's sort of the inimitable original Jason L. Baptiste, who's sort of a savant and a maven, if you will, in the space. So thank you so much for joining us, Jason. And
told you, fanboy.
I can't say enough nice things.
Thank you for having
and,
me.
And you know, as always, we want your feedback on this episode. We want you to do it right now. Don't delay. So scroll down if you're listening on futurecommerce.fm. Scroll down to the bottom. Leave some feedback for our guest. We'll make sure that he gets it because we want you to be part of this this episode. So please leave that for us. Also, if you're not subscribed, hit us up on iTunes or Google Play, and you can also listen, you know, right from your Amazon Echo device. You know, one day if those things ever take off, people might actually use them. But you can listen with Future Commerce. Just say Alexa, play Future Commerce podcast. And anyway, thank you to our guests. Thank you, Brian, and to our listeners. Keep looking toward the future.